Hello, and welcome to Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. We broadcast each week on the premier channel for transformational talk radio on the Internet, Seventh Wave Network, online at seventhwavenetwork.com. Movie audiences today are once more being challenged by films that make them think, inspire them on deeper levels, and question the status quo. So each week, we showcase today's top independent and visionary filmmakers whose movies evoke what I call the spirit of film, which is a metaphor for the movie's magical power to transform our lives. You know, listeners, I interview many filmmakers on this program with incredible stories, but I have to say that the story of this film, a movie simply titled One, tops them all. Okay, so picture this. In the spring of 2002, a 45-year-old trial lawyer named Ward Powers awoke one night with a strange notion to make an independent film with the theme of We Are All One. Now, Ward was not a filmmaker, nor any of his friends whom he enlisted to help. So, with no experience in the film industry, no training, and armed with only a digital video camera, a list of 20 questions, and a dream, three suburban dads set out to become independent filmmakers in search of the meaning of life. They ended up interviewing some of the world's most renowned and respected spiritual leaders, authors, icons, and celebrated masters of our time, completing a full-length motion picture that has won numerous awards, selected for screenings at dozens of film festivals, and seen in more than 100 cities on four continents, and translated in more than 15 languages. So with no film production experience, no connections, no script, and no budget, Ward Powers and his friends said, no problem, and created one of the most remarkable documentary films of recent times. So stay tuned to hear the amazing story of a movie that got made by stepping outside the lines of everyday existence, One, the movie. Today we have with us a guest who's made a very unique film. He's a first-time filmmaker, and there's quite a story behind the movie that we're going to be talking about today. It's a movie simply titled One. And with us today is Ward Powers. So first of all, Ward, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. Thanks. It's very good to be here.
Could just kind of give us an idea of how this all turned into a whole new life for you.
The world is an ever-evolving place, and I'm here to witness that one firsthand, and I'm happy to be in the space. It was, you know, I will say that it, sometimes when people ask me about the story, and they'll say, oh, gee, you're just this, you know, you're the trial lawyer that woke up with this idea, and that's true, but it wouldn't be probably accurate to say that I was just leading this kind of unconscious life as a, you know, trial lawyer, and then suddenly had this epiphany and my life changed. I feel like I've always tried to try to nurture my creative side. I've written poetry, and in fact, I wrote a book of poetry. And I play in bands, and I'm very, you know, I feel like if you stay in touch with your creative side, things can grow within you that might not otherwise be available. And so in some way, perhaps this whole creative movie-making experience was somehow birthed through that process. But whatever it was, I'm a 45-year-old guy when this happens. I'm 49 now, but... and so I'm probably at a station in life where I'm starting to maybe question, ask those deeper questions that we do in midlife, you know, those kind of meaning of life type of questions. And so that's going on personally. And then the events of 9/11 happen, and my wife and I, as we explore these, as we observe the world together, we're really lamenting what we felt was the world breaking into teams again, and this concept that, oh no, you know, we're gonna learn to hate or be taught to hate another billion people, and there was just this internal strife that whole concept created. And somewhere out of that, one morning I woke up with this notion, naively, why don't we make a film? Why don't we make an independent film that tries to remind us of our oneness. Now, I have no experience in filmmaking. I'm not even good with our home movies, so I really don't know what would have made me think that this would have been a real possibility. But, you know, I mean, my thought was, look, with the technology now available for a couple of $1,000, you can get a really high-end video camera that can make almost film-looking quality, and you can edit it now on your Apple computer in the basement, and there's all of a sudden this whole world of creative possibilities that didn't exist just a few years ago. And why don't we make use of that and just have some fun along the way and get some friends, and we called a cousin and my friend and said, look, you guys want to do this? And from there, the idea was born. And it's interesting because, you know, sometimes you have those ideas and you might have it early in the morning. This was probably 6 o'clock in the morning, and I shared it with my wife, and she said, yeah, that sounds like it'd be fun. And then later that day, the PBS had that Power of Myth special on with Joseph Campbell, and the whole theme of it's Follow Your Bliss. And that really, having seen it that day on TV, we looked at each other and said, yep, it was almost as though he was talking to us. We got to do this thing. So off we went, and we mail ordered a camera, and the journey began.
Now, talk to me about the questions that you ask of all these great spiritual teachers in the film and leaders and people on the street. Originally, that was your idea, to go out and just talk to people on the street and ask them questions like, why is there poverty and suffering in the world, and why are so many people depressed, and what are we all so afraid of? When is war justifiable? What is our greatest distraction? What happens to you after you die? I mean, talk to me about, did you sit down and think about these questions, and how did you come up with this list of 20 questions? What was sort of how was that born?
We asked our friends and our neighbors and relatives, if you could sit with a spiritually enlightened person for 15 minutes, what would you ask them? And then we had them write those questions out on like a 3x5 cards and give them to us. And then we put them all in a pile, and then one night we sat around and went through them and kind of culled from this mass of questions the ones that we thought ultimately would make the best, the most interesting material for the movie. And and so again, the list you just came with, those were the ones that really kind of grew out of the pile. We started with about 30 questions, and then they kind of got, so it was overlapping, we ended up down to 20. And just real questions that real people would want to know the answers to. This was what we were trying to do, is to try to keep the material that we were going to be gathering as connected to the questions that really live within all of us, as opposed to maybe the more intellectual or esoteric kinds of questions, or, you know, perhaps maybe even more spiritually profound questions, if you will, but really just what would real folks on the street like to know the answer to, or what are these quote-unquote ultimate questions, meaning of life kind of things, and that's really where it all began. And as you mentioned, the original plan was to take these questions and hit the streets with our camera and just ask a broad cross-section of humanity to answer these questions. And the interesting part about how this creative process began is that we didn't have a storyboard, we didn't have a budget, we didn't have any technical skills, and we didn't really have a design or a plan as to how these materials would fit together. We only knew that if we asked life's ultimate questions to people, that the process of looking them in the eye and listening to their voices as they struggled with answering these kinds of questions, something about that experience would remind us of our oneness. And beyond that, there was no real shape, form, or design to this thing. And that's kind of a unique way to go into a project, but very free in a way, too. So that's really what we went out to the streets with. And we did about a month or two of street interviews, and we came up with the thought of, well, it'd be maybe to lend some more credibility to the project if we were able to get a spiritual author or a master or a recognizable figure to answer these questions and kind of lend their voice to the project.
So I want to stop you at that point in the story, because what was well-defined from the outset was the theme of the project was We Are All One, which is the theme of the film.
Yes.
So that would be the force that was going to carry you through the making of this film. That's what you were all held the intention of. That's what you're making the film about. And however it transpired, however it came together synchronistically, that was what you were moving forward with on this film. So that... Because that to me is really important, because ultimately that's what people get out of the movie when they watch it. They get that experience that we are all one, and all the different ways of how that comes about in our lives on the earth and through various forces and energies and so forth. So the next step is that you had an idea to talk with spiritual leaders and authors and mystics, and maybe so. The first person that you contacted, and this is a really amazing story. It's one of the central points in the film. So talk about your first connection with Robert Thurman.
Yes, one of the when we sent our first batch of emails to some of these folks, probably within 15 minutes, I get an email back from Robert Thurman. And in kind of a really cool, cryptic way, he says, "Yes, we are all one, and I'd be happy to be interviewed for your project in the Catskill Mountains when the grass is green," or something very poetic and kind of really cool, short little response, Robert. And then we ended up being invited to and going to his home on a June afternoon in the Catskill Mountains in New York, to his summer home, and conducting what was really our first, you know, kind of an official interview. And, you know, other than our street interviews, and we had done a little radio talk show and so forth locally, and kind of gotten our feet wet with how to run the equipment. But all of a sudden, it's funny how these things grow on you. You know, we went from being this kind of group of hodgepodge friends on a lark having fun to, oh my God, we're in New York as a quote-unquote film crew meeting a famous man. I mean, again, for your audience, if they're not familiar with Dr. Thurman, he's not only probably, he's considered by Time Magazine to be one of the 25 most influential people in the country, but also is a first American-born Tibetan Buddhist monk and close friends with the Dalai Lama, and a very powerful man and a respected figure. So all of a sudden, here we are in New York as a film crew interviewing this, you know, this amazing guy. And boy, that kind of changes the stakes a little bit, because, you know, all of a sudden there's pressure on you, and oh, we've got to do this right, and we've got to, you know, we can't look like a bunch of goofy friends, you know, out on a some kind of a college assignment. I mean, all of a sudden it was the real deal, and so in a kind of a fun way, it upped the ante a little bit. And but it was an amazing, amazing experience, and as you know, Randall, from having seen the film, there was something that happened in that interview between Dr. Thurman and myself that turned out to be a real microcosm of the spiritual journey, and played a very key role in the movie.
It's a great point in the movie. I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't seen it. But it's something that happened during that first interview that really set the stage for many things that transpired after that and the people who you spoke with. So talk about what, after you interviewed Robert Thurman, you started thinking, well, maybe we can make this go bigger. Maybe we can get more people. So what were your next thoughts after that, and what happened with the next interviews?
Well, right about the time we got back from New York, somebody knew somebody, you know how that always works, who was booking Deepak Chopra's time at a conference he was in Indiana, which was about 2 hours from our home here in Michigan. And they were able to get us on his schedule for a half hour. But they called us and said, "I can do this for you, and I can get you a half hour Deepak Chopra's time, but you got to be here in South Bend, Indiana, by tomorrow morning at 8. So we had to get our parents to come watch the kids, hop in the car, drive all night, go do this interview with Deepak in the morning. And then while we were at that conference, we ended up getting Barbara Marx Hubbard and Brother Wayne Teasdale, and had this remarkable opening. So again, all of this influx of wisdom and recognizable personalities, and again, up the ante. You could tell there was something magical starting to happen. I mean, it was in the progression of things, we could feel that something about the project was had magic to it. There was, it was more than just buddies with a camera goofing around. It was starting to take shape, and there was something happening, and we were suddenly gaining access to people and personalities and opportunities that, quite frankly, we had no business, you know, by traditional standards, having access to. I mean, we have no connections. We have no experience. We have, you know, no history. You know, normally, you know, you have to, if you want to get an interview with these folks, their time is valuable. You have to pay for it. We had no budget. Everybody volunteered. We couldn't say, gee, we've done this film and that film. Oh, okay, great. We couldn't say, gee, we know so-and-so that you know. Nothing. I mean, really, these doors were just swinging open for us by nothing more than the power of oneness. And that is that when people heard that the theme of our movie and our working title is We Are All One, the doors open on the power of that energy alone. Because to a person, everybody who was kind enough to become a part of this project said that they were answering this call to oneness, that this energy, that this consciousness, that this awareness, that we are, in fact, all one, that we are all interconnected, and that you and the other are one, and there is nothing separate from you. It's not you against the other. It's not you against the world. You're not separate from it. This knowledge, this awareness, this experiential knowing of this truth, this reality, is the next level of human evolution in consciousness, and that this energy is now just moving into the world. And all these folks working at this level have a very profound recognition of this reality. And so when you come in that name, when you come calling out that truth, it's amazing what happens, because the power of that energy as an emerging energy in the world is enormous. And this is really what we found ourselves very naively and very innocently in the middle of. And there was something both humbling and empowering about that. I mean, doors opened, things changed, the project went from becoming this kind of a group of friends, you know, having fun, and it was always fun, don't get me wrong. We had fun the whole time, but it definitely became known that the movie had dimensions and possibilities far beyond those that we ever envisioned. And then it just went from there. I mean, once we had Robert Thurman and Deepak Chopra and Barbara Marx Hubbard, then the next thing you know, it was Llewellyn Vaughn Lee and Ram Dass and Father Thomas Keating and Rhian Eisler, and, you know, even the music and voice of the Dalai Lama himself, all came to us. Over the next year, we basically met and interviewed Thich Nhat Hanh and Sister Chan Kong and all of these great spiritual leaders.
They were all from different faiths, too. I mean, there were Indian yogis, rabbis, imams, priests, monks, Buddhist nuns, Native American medicine men.
Yep.
These are all people who are in this movie, and they're from all faiths. And it was just, it's amazing to watch this, because the film not only shows, and we hear the interviews and the conversation that you had with all these great thinkers and spiritual leaders, but also the story is, it also talks about, as you're describing it here, your journey in how this all transpired for you. So there's these two stories going on at the same time, telling the behind-the-scenes story, and we're also seeing the story about oneness and from all these different speakers who you're interviewing. So at this point, so you're now, over the course of the next year, you're talking with all these great leaders and getting this information, but you also created a character in the story where you also showed his journey. So talk a little bit about that aspect of the film.
Well, once we had this, and by the time we were done with the interviews, we had about, maybe 50 hours of interview material. And our thought process, our real goal was to try to create art out of this, so that we didn't want it to become information. We didn't want it to become kind of a talking head PBS kind of a series where, you know, what is the meaning of life? And then, you know, eight people give complete lineal answers, one after the other, from different traditions. You know, and not that there'd be anything wrong with that, except that that's such a head trip. And we were hoping to move the piece beyond information and to try to, at least the conceptually, to include imagery, metaphor, and music, so that there would be kind of, I don't know, more of a dreamlike quality to it, so that it could be experienced as well as thought about or listened to. And in that vein, we developed this concept of having a kind of a nameless character with no real lines that woke up in a real bad place in kind of a seedy hotel, and then it's just an image. He wakes up here, and then he travels through the day, and he finishes this one day where the river meets the ocean, obviously for this great metaphor of enlightenment. And then we would use that traveling character who would encounter kind of these images and voices along the way as a thread to, kind of a metaphor for this journey, and that we would kind of wrap these interview materials in sections along that imagery. And that was the original concept for the piece. And when we finished that version of the movie after 2 years, we were introduced to a wonderful man named Sam Edge Looney, who's a high-level local creative and just has remarkable insight, and he'd heard about the project, and he says, you know, tell me what you're working on here and show me what you got. So I showed him this 30-minute piece from that we had put together in kind of a real rough cut version, and started telling him the story as I'm sharing it with you today, and he says, whoa, hang on. He says, what's your hope here? And I said, my hope is to create a movie that has enough entertainment value and enough humanity, human interest to it, and enough artistic expression in it so that it has crossover appeal, so that it's not just a movie that spiritual seekers go to see. Oh, you know, I'm a big Ram Dass fan, or I'm a big Thich Nhat Hanh fan, or I'm a Robert Thurman fan, and therefore I'm going to go to this movie. But I wanted a movie that if my parents were to see it on at the local theater, they'd say, oh, you know, there's that movie about those guys at mail order that camera met all those famous people, and it had a human component to it. And he said, well, the story is your story. And he said, you have to tell this story of what happened to you. And he said, take the movie that you've made and break it into pieces, and then recast it as the and share with the audience what happened to you along the way, because this is really the power, the living expression of the power of moving outside of the lines of your normal life. Which is exactly then what we did. And
that's what a lot of people connect to in watching the film, because people who are in midlife, like so many of us are, they see that, and they see that you can still have your dream. I mean, it's still possible. And that's one of the messages of your film.
Yeah. And it's funny, because so that we had to go back in the basement and redo this whole movie that we thought we were done with. We had to recut it to tell our story. And now, as you just said, what's happened is that so there's really three threads of the story. There's this story of what happened to us along the way, and then this nameless, faceless, metaphorical character in the interviews. But that first thread, the story of us and what happened along the way, does really seem to be the point of inspiration. When people see us after the movie, I mean, they might ask about what was it like to meet so-and-so or so-and-so, but they really say, tell me about what made you decide to step out and live this dream, because we all live with these unrealized dreams and hopes and ambitions and knowledge within ourselves that quite often we are somebody totally different than the life we're leading. That we might be living a life because our parents told us we were this way, or because we were schooled in this profession, or, you know, I'm practicing law because my dad was a lawyer, and, you know, that's what they said. They sent me to law school, and I can do it fine, but, you know, I had something else living inside of me. And when I said yes to it, and it was authentically what was living inside of me, I mean, in my case, maybe it was this, you know, expression of this film and whatever else comes from it, but then this magic comes to life in yourself and in your world, and everybody has it, and it's 6.5 billion expressions of it, and so few of them have the freedom to find that. And that's really what I hope the movie in some way inspires in audience members, and that is to find the freedom within themselves to ask the question, who am I? And I really think, you know, people always say, what was the one question you didn't ask that you wish you'd ask? And I said, of all the questions we ask everybody, for me, that was the beginning and the end, and question, who am I? And it was never asked during the movie, but it was lived. It was a lived experience, this exploration that our lives are, yours and mine and every person who's can hear my voice. Who am I? This is what we're here for, to know ourselves, our true selves, so that we can then live a life in accord with that and become an expression of that oneness. And, you know, that's a remarkable experience to know. And in some crazy, magical way, this movie, for whatever its production limitations are and for whatever its you know, its limitations might be, it seems to have the power to bring people together in an audience to share it and to start asking that of themselves and to start more deeply exploring the nature of reality and our place in it.
Ward, I'd like to just kind of backtrack a little bit. And you were talking about how the movie actually sort of it took on a life of its own. It became alive. It started having a quality to it that you started to feel in as the interviews that you were getting. And one of the interviews that was very instrumental, I think, from what I've heard you in talk about this before in other interviews, is when you went and had some time to spend with Llewellyn Vaughn Lee, who's a Sufi sheikh, and talk about that experience when there's sort of, during that interview, which is one of the central points in the film, something magical happens. And you can even tell when you're watching it that there's something that happened when you actually filmed this part of the movie. So can you just describe that at that stage, what did you sense? Something was beginning to change about it, or the way that he talked about the aspect of oneness, or just give us an idea of what happened at that point in the stage of the production of the film.
Well, Llewellyn Vaughn Lee, for those in the audience that's not familiar with his work, and I wasn't until a young man showed up at my door and here at my law office with a book in his hand and says, "You need to have this guy in your movie." And he gives me Llewellyn's book, and he, long story short, sends an email to Llewellyn in my name asking him about, telling him about the movie, and Llewellyn said yes to it and invites us out. And then I read the book, but I didn't have a full appreciation for the depth and just amazing gifts and depth of spirit and knowledge. And, you know, he's a true mystic and of the Sufi tradition. And when we spent time with him at his interview, it became very clear very quickly that there was a profound connection in our coming together that was way beyond his giving us some kind of an intellectually satisfying answer to these questions. And there was, he had the ability to look deeply into who we were and what we were doing, and it was amazing, because we, at the end of his interview, we were sitting around this big table with the other members of the Sufi community, and we were having pie and tea and kind of talking, and at some point during the conversations, the table fell silent, and in that silence there was an indescribable awakenedness in the room, as though something more was going on than, I hate to sound too metaphysical because it actually sounds corny, except that I was there and I lived it, but there was a knowing in that room that something was happening. And when the silence was broken by the master, and Llewellyn said to me, "The work you're doing is very important and you need my help." And he made a phone call that ended up connecting me to a foundation that paid for our travel expenses and all of our equipment and all of these expenses that we didn't have the money for, because we were just doing this with our vacation money, and allowed us to really make the movie. And later, when the movie was done, 2 years later, so we get this grant that allows us to then basically pay for completing this movie. And then when it's done and Llewellyn saw the final product, he met us in Cleveland because he was doing a conference there, and he said, "What you've created is alive." And he said, "I want to tell you that day we spent together 2 years ago after your interview, when we sat in that room in the silence," he said, "I recognized that you had been given a gift and chosen for some work here that you really didn't recognize and don't to this day fully recognize what it is." And he said, "And it's beautiful because there was something about the naivety of our group, and that the fact that we weren't trying to be rich, we didn't want to be famous, we didn't want anything. I was there with my wife and my friends, and we were laughing, and we were enjoying just meeting people and having fun and didn't have any agenda or any big grand plan, but we were enjoying the journey. And he said there was something magical about that space we were working in, and this gift of this movie was, it kind of grew in this space, and he recognized it and knew that his role was to kind of help bring it to life. And, you know, when somebody working at his level sees those things, you very humbly respect what they say and see, and it means that you have to honor that energy, because the chances to do work at that level don't come around all the time. So we have, and since he has shared that insight with us, we have very diligently stayed with this project, and since its release of the movie a year ago, it has now been seen on 5 continents by about 100,000 people, and it's going to be opening in Mexico and Argentina and Germany and possibly Brazil. It's showing in Israel this week, and it is being requested by universities. It shows at Harvard. It's showing in high schools. Corporations across the country are contacting us to include the movie in their corporate diversity programs and their employee training. All of these kinds of growth and applications of this movie that we made in our basement in Detroit that we had no idea of, but it is so alive and so independent of us. We didn't design it for a corporate diversity program. We never thought of it showing as part of high school classes or in colleges or theologies or divinity schools. We didn't think of all of these things, but yet when you're coming from that space, these things become known, and right now it's a truly remarkable time, because this little movie is really finding your wings. And in fact, the DVD, if I can just make a real quick plug here, DVD,
give the websites too.
Yes, it's www.onetheproject.com. Or onethemovie.org. Either one of those will get you there. But one, the project, all one word, or onethemovie.com. onethemovie.org or onetheproject.com. And there's trailers of the movie on there, and also some announcements on these new programs that are coming out, and the availability of the DVD November 1st, because we've had so many requests to buy this DVD, because it's one of those movies that when you see it once, it's not unusual for me to be at a screening where people are seeing it for the 7th or 8th time. I have one woman in the East Coast that was on her 15th time. So it kind of has that. It looks different every time you see it, because there's much going on.
That, you know, you just made a really interesting point. When I watched the movie the first time, it was actually, I think, about almost 2 years ago. I think it was when you actually first just got it done and were sending it out to some publicist.
Yep.
And then the following March, we screened the film here in Phoenix, and we got about 120 people show up. We sold out the night, and afterwards, everybody did want to buy the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that was really special about the film that I've seen on repeated viewings, you have a different response to it.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit more about that, because that sometimes happened. I've read some of the reviews, and in your audiences, people have come back to see it again, and they brought their friends, and then they have a different take on it. And so just go into that in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, it's interesting, because there's so much packed into 80 minutes that the first time through it, the experience can be overwhelming, and it seems like, oh, my God, that's a lot going on, and you can almost leave dizzy. And then the second time through, now I'm more familiar with this, and then you hear a new voice. And the third time through, it's yet, you know, we've had people say, so is there a couple different versions of this movie floating around out there? Because the first one I saw was different than this. And I say, no, there's only one version, and the one you saw is the same one. And they say, I just can't believe it, because it's a different movie. And the other interesting feature about that is a lot of times people, and I don't know, Randall, if this was your experience, but when the first time, sometimes if it's the first time they've seen the movie and they watch it at home by themselves, they'll say, oh, yeah, I liked it. And then they'll watch it a second time in a community, in a group.
Right. I watched it with my daughter the first time, and the second time I saw it was with about 100 people.
And I don't know if this was your experience, but so many people say, oh, my God, I liked it at home. I loved it in the crowd. Because there's a collective energy that happens in the room. when it's seen in community. And this is really why I've kind of hesitated, maybe to my commercial detriment, by not releasing the DVD earlier. But I've kind of made the decision to hold off because I wanted to try to promote as many community screenings as possible, because there is a power and an energy in the room when people sit together and watch the film, and then they gather in circles, they sit in their chairs after, they have dialogues, we've had groups have meditation after, we've had people have, youth groups have had discussions after, or they stand in the lobby of the movie theater and they talk about it afterwards. It's just amazing what it promotes in a public gathering, and there's it has a very powerful effect in that setting, and that's one of the reasons I really promoted this. Our movie was seen primarily in host site screenings, and that is, if you go to the website, again, wonderproject.com, there is a host site option where you can actually sign up and right online and get the disc sent and have your own event. And what I like about those events is that it empowers real people to create events and venues of their own, so that just in the same way the movie was made by an unlikely source, now too everybody becomes a film exhibitor, and everybody can have an event, whether it's in their home theater or the library or the high school auditorium. But people from all walks of life are having these events where they're putting out flyers and they invite people in and they have these events and then they dialogue afterwards. Because the movie did open at theaters, and in fact, it's funny, probably we opened in Seattle last January, and we did almost $34,000 on a single screen in 2 weeks. They were lined up around the block for every showing for 2 weeks. It was the number one movie in the country on a single screen for those 2 weeks. And when it was all said and done, our feeling on it, and they're saying, well, we're going to take you to six other cities and do this, that, and the other thing. And we said, you know what? Let's just let people show it, real people show it, instead of theaters. Because at the theaters, the experience was people come, they buy the popcorn, and they leave. And it's much more subject to criticism in this, because people are going and expecting, people get used to glitz and high tech, and it's not the same human experience as when a community person raises their hand and says, how about we all get together at the library and watch this cool movie? Then the expectations are different and the experience is different. So we actually pulled it from theaters, even though we had this amazing success, because we felt we'd rather not worry about success in dollars and cents. We'd rather have a more powerful human experience. And it has been all of that. And it still shows every month, just by word of mouth, 50, 60 screenings around North America a month. It's amazing.
Right. When I decided to bring the film here in March of earlier this year, I went to a local organization here in Phoenix called Interfaith Arizona, and I brought the trailer. I had the DVD, and I brought the trailer with me, and they had their monthly meeting, and I screened for them the trailer and talked about where we're going to show the film and when and everything. And they just, I'm going to tell everybody on my email list. I mean, yeah. they just absolutely said, this is perfect for what we're trying to accomplish with our goals and our organization. So if anybody wants to screen the film, find an organization in your community to partner with to help you publicize it, to help bring an audience to this and share it. And then after we watched the film in March, we did a short interview with you. You called in and you spoke to everybody. But then we spent about, I don't know if you saw this, because I wrote back to Karen, that we sat around for about 2.5 hours and talked and about what was in the movie, and we had questions prepared that I had prepared with. It was at a Unity Church, and then we just talked and talked, and everybody just wanted to hang out and talk afterwards.
Isn't that cool? I know. It's amazing. it just does. It just has that power to stimulate dialogue, and that's really what it's all about. And we really try to hold that space where we don't offer the movie up as answers to life's questions. We offer the movie up as an invitation to ask life's questions, because these questions are really not so much meant to be answered as much as they're meant to be explored and shared. And this is, it was funny, when one of the first screenings of the movie for a real well-known Detroit area media person, for the Detroit Free Press, came to a private screening and watched the film. And at the end, he said, I got to tell you, I get stacks and stacks and stacks of media, and everyone wants me to watch their movie and write an article. And he said, I'm watching your film, and I'm thinking, this is really good. This is really good, and I'm just waiting for you to get to the end of the movie and wreck it by telling me what group I had to belong to, or what, you know, what belief system I had to subscribe to, or who I should donate money to. And he said, when you got to the end and you didn't, I thought, hallelujah. Somebody finally just left it for the viewer to make of it what they will. And that's really was a high compliment, because that was one of the real struggles, because especially when you're dealing with, you know, diverse religious views and philosophies and spiritual language and conversations and different wisdom traditions, it is a challenge to, in the editing process, to lay these voices and these pieces and these opinions and these expressions side by side and allow them to create a cohesive body of material without direction or comment, though. So that, you know, there's, our hope was to respect all viewpoints. I mean, there's, and you'll remember in the beginning of the film, there's a fundamentalist Christian radio talk show host who opens the movie with the wish for the world that all 6 billion people would fall to their knees and accept Jesus Christ. And 15 seconds later in the film, our next interview was with an atheist who said, God is make-believe, God is fairy tales. And that juxtaposition of those two extreme viewpoints so early in the film was very intentional and thought out from our standpoint, because what we wanted to do is to set up a tension in the film that would resolve as the piece went along, but that would hold together those extremes, those opinions, side by side, like kids on a playground, like making them hold hands, without saying you're the good guy and you're the bad guy, or you're both bad guys, or you're both good guys, without any comment at all, but just making the kids stand side by side and holding hands, and then allow the viewer to hear the echoes of those voices, each of them on both extremes and everywhere in between, that lives inside of each and every one of us. Because this, I think, is at the end of the day what our journey to know oneness better has helped us to experientially understand. And that is that oneness has a much more profound implication than the one that we set out to prove. When we bought that camera and hit the streets with that little sheet of questions, we thought that what would happen is that people will answer life's ultimate questions, and you'll find out that we all essentially want the same things. And that in that sameness, that we all really are the same at the core of us, and in that sameness, we are all one. And by the end of the journey, not so much as a product of information that we received by asking the questions, but merely by the process of the experiences that we had along the way, this whole notion of oneness had a whole different meaning, and that is that the oneness of us all lives not it lives in the differences, that it lives in not just tolerating differences, but in embracing the beauty of this creation that we live in, the divergent thoughts and the divergent views and the confliction and the points of difference, and all of these miraculous points of that appear in the illusion of life to be separation, but are actually a grand experience that we have the privilege of walking through, so that in the reflection of all of those experiences and in all of those voices, we might better know ourselves, and in better knowing ourselves, recognize that we are in fact one, and that this whole illusion of our world and our lives and this what seems like such consternation is in fact just living inside of us. And that is a kind of a massive thought but one that is so fundamentally and inescapably true that when you can see this life and the world and all of the apparent divergence that it offers you as little mirrors reflecting back to you something that actually lives inside of you, the rules change because you no longer judge it. You try to take it as almost medicinal experience, so that all of these things that cause you judgment, or that you, when you find yourself judging them, marginalizing them, separating them, that you recognize that process and you begin to learn from it. And then and when you can get to that space, listen, it's still a long and winding road, but at least you start to recognize the rules of the game. And the rules of the game are, it changed the nature of the game, and it becomes less frightening, and it becomes more beautiful, and it doesn't necessarily become more painful or less painful. You laugh harder and you cry harder, you know, but it is all a part of this amazing experience of our oneness being lived out. And holy smokes, I mean, how do you quantify that? You know, when people ask you, you know, oh, gee, you asked 20 questions to great leaders, and what was that like? You know, you can talk about the experience, but you know, as I just tried to share with you, the real depth of what's happened here and what our lives hold for us is beyond words.
Well, thanks for that, Ward. Watching the film, a lot of people always ask about a couple of people that are in this movie. And one of the people who is not famous that's in the film, who always gets asked about, is a young man named Chris Willis. So can you talk a little bit about that part in the movie? And then have you had contact with Chris since the film? And just tell us a little bit about that, about Chris and his journey. And has he seen the film yet?
Not that I know of, although it screened in his neck of the woods recently. Let me just back up by sharing with your audience who Chris is.
Right.
When we were in Colorado, we went there to do Father Thomas Keating's interview at Snowmass. And on the way there, we stopped in a little mountain village for lunch. And as we were walking out of a restaurant, there was a group of young local teens sitting out on skateboards and just kind of sitting out in the street. And my wife, who has a great insight for these kinds of things, says, listen, if we want to do a movie about oneness, we got to talk to these kids, because oneness isn't about enlightened beings giving some kind of, you know, magical answers. It's about life-led, and that means, you know, real folks like these young kids in the street. So recognizing, as I usually do, the wisdom of her insight, I went and got the camera, and one of the kids we interviewed, his name was Chris Willis, and he's this kid with dreadlocks. And when we ask him the question, what is your wish for the world, again, without giving away the response, and I'm prodding viewers to go to the movie, and again, you can find out more at wontheproject.com, but his response to that question was such an honest and humble and vulnerable response. There was such a humanity about him, and his hand trembled, and he spoke words that I really think powerful independent filmmaking is all about, and that is capturing real human beings and real vulnerable life's moments. And there was a moment he had that happened on film that moves audiences to tears. And at the end of the screenings, when we say to folks, who stays with you? And, you know, there's all these famous people in the movie. And, you know, for every Deepak Chopra hand we get up, I get five that says Chris Willis. So this homeless kid from Colorado steals the show with his human vulnerability. And we were showing the movie at the Cleveland Institute of Arts, and a woman stood up after and was asking this very question about Chris, and because as always, all the people were asking about him, and we never saw him after that interview. You know, we did his interview in the street that day, and we hugged them all, and we thanked them, and this was 3 years ago. So, you know, off we went, and then the whole movie happened, and we really don't have any way to get in touch with this kid. And this woman said, you know, you don't know how important it might be to him to know that he's in a movie. It could change his life. You know, it could really change his life. I work with troubled teens, and I'm here to tell you, this is crucial. And there's another woman in the film, Dragonfly, who is she was a face painter in the park in Woodstock, New York, who likewise has a very profound moment in the film that a lot of people ask about. And same with her, you know, as she's seen the movie, she needs to know that she's in the movie. And now Chris Willis, this woman from Cleveland, somebody was going to look for, try to work with the police department there and see if they could find him. And I did an interview on a real prominent station in that area recently and made sure I mentioned his name and gave the story about him. I don't know whether, I've not heard from him yet, so I don't know whether he's aware of the movie or his role in it. Dragonfly, on the other hand, the woman from New York, she had an uncle that was at a screening in Malibu, California. And he says, I'm sitting in this room watching this movie, and all of a sudden up comes my niece. He says, I stand up, and I said, oh, my God, that's my niece. And he called the family because they said, oh, my God, the whole family was so excited that she's in this movie. And then we heard from her and talked to her about it. And she was sent her a copy of the movie and just really so excited to be in it. But it's the real people, and that just goes to show you. You know, it's great. Llewellyn Vaughn Lee's powerful, and, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh is amazing, and Deepak Chopra is always engaging. But it's funny how, at the end of the day, some of the real people, just folks on the street, are the ones that really leave a lasting impression on audience members who see the film.
Well, thanks for that. That's a great story, because I didn't know any of that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, because we asked about, when we watched the film in March, everyone always asked about Chris and some of the other people. So thanks for answering that. Well, it might be fun at some point to do, when you release possibly an extended version of the DVD, to go back and interview them and talk about their response. That might be kind of fun. Well, we're just about winding down. We've got a few more minutes, Ward. So I just want to ask you, so where are you going from here? What's your plans for the film in the future? And are you thinking of, I mean, you talked about expanding into different areas in the business world, corporate, and you're going to be releasing the film soon on DVD. But what are your other thoughts about the film at this point? Where is the film telling you that it wants to go?
Well, this is kind of interesting, and this is really just emerging right now. And that is, we are actually planning to do a day of oneness or a weekend of oneness, probably at the end of January, maybe February, where we are going to try to have the movie shown in 1,000 venues, if not simultaneously, on the same day, for free. We're going to make it of it. We're going to try to find corporate sponsors to underwrite it, and we're going to try to, on five or six, on every continent, we are going to try to have events going on simultaneously, that we are going to have a day of oneness, and that at each event you might choose to have a drum circle, a meditation, you might have a group session, and it's not just spiritual communities, because this is, we think that the work to be done here is we want it to be shown in libraries and in classrooms, but also in bookstores. And, you know, we said even garages, you know, the quickie oil change, roll that TV in, and all you have to do is sign a pledge and says, on this day, we're going to bring at least, you know, five or more people together in community and roll in a TV, and we're going to watch it together, and then we're going to ask the questions, the 20 questions from the movie, or we're going to have a dialogue after, or we're going to listen to music, or we're going to have a poet read. Anybody can build whatever kind of event they want, but across the world on one day, we want to share this message of oneness with everybody. So this is something that right now is in the works, and we're just putting the team together to make this happen. And then along with that, again, comes all of the different, you know, again, we're building, I'm just putting together, finalizing a study guide so that the movie will be able to, it will come in, you can actually order a home program so that you can have a home course where you get the movie, extra material, a soundtrack, and a study guide, which will break down scene by scene what the theme of that scene is, what my intentions were, what we were getting at, focusing in on group questions, issues raised, so that it'll actually be a facilitator's guide, so that the person that has the group session in their home can read it before the meeting, and then you can kind of guide a conversation. And then if you want to make a study group out of it, then each month thereafter we're going to make available the complete audio CD of a different teacher, so that you can then, you know, get to know the 10 or 12 major teachers from the movie. And then we're building different programs like that, because really our hope is, again, to invite people into this space where the movie acts as a gateway into a larger community. And then you get like-minded people together in your community, and you start to, you know, you meet at your house once a month, and, you know, we have these sessions, and we ask these questions, and we just dialogue. So we're building a home program, a corporate program. We're building a college curriculum so that there'll actually be study materials that will be a course that will be based on the movie, or a section for a course. Again, high school diversity programs, so that people that are looking, you know, these high schools have these diversity programs that are funded, you know, ongoing programs that they're looking for material for. And we want to have the movie available for those settings. So all of these different outgrowths from the film. In fact, now even people are using the questions from the movie and videotaping them at schools and in churches and public areas, and they're sending us the tapes. So we may actually have a sequel come to us out of all this tape that we're going to get in from these folks that are starting to ask the questions out in the streets. So.
Well, that's terrific, Roy. Well, count me in. I'll help you out in the Phoenix area here, and give your, we're just about out of time here, so
okay.
Give your websites one more time where people can get in touch with you, and then we'll close it from there.
Well, great. Again, it's onetheproject.com or onethemovie.org, and at either one of those places you can contact us to set up a screening or to do a home, this new home program is going to be coming out, or sign up for our newsletter.
All right.
and be a part of it.
All right, terrific. Well,
thanks.
Ward, thanks so much for your time.
I really
appreciate it, and
we'll
be back in touch with you real soon.
Let's do that.
Well, that's a wrap for our show for this week. Join us again next week as we showcase the very best in movie entertainment that inspires us towards positive change and honors the belief that simple choices can change the world. I'd like to thank our engineers, Ruben Colom and Ryan Treasure, who helped put the show together, and especially to Tom Kirsch and the rest of the Catfish Groove Farm Band for our theme music. Don't you like that name, Catfish Groove Farm? You can hear more of their really cool tunes at catfishgroovefarm.com. And of course, you can find out more on the internet about Spirit of Film Conversations and the movies we talk about each week by going to my website at spiritoffilm.net. And of course, please tell your friends about where to find our program right here on SeventhWaveNetwork.com. And remember, you are the writer, producer, director, and star of your own movie that's called Your Life. So make it a blockbuster, and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randall Abaro for Spirit of Film Conversations. We'll see you next week.